Okay, that was, I have no idea what that song was. What was that song?
It's Over.
It's Over
by Roy Orbison.
And we were a little slow getting up on the live airwaves again. So that's it for Ear Buddies today. Happy New Year, Ear Buddies. You guys coming back in the new year? Yeah, all right. So are we. You're about to listen to 2 hours of talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective, otherwise known as socialist alternative radio talk. And oh, I just explained what we were. Okay, that's good. Today's show, music from the Fugees at some point. Can I see that?
Yep.
I'm going to throw that in there. And among other things. But we are going to use that that hook, or whatever it's called, that angle that even the corporate media has been using lately, like a national propaganda radio, about 1968 and the anniversary year of 2018. We're going to be talking about the sort of anniversary, as if that's kind of a wrong word. That's kind of a happy word for the Mexican massacre of Tlatelolco. And I'm mispronouncing that.
I can't pronounce it myself because it's not Spanish.
Yeah, it's a native term.
Aztec.
Yeah. Tlatelolco. which we will explain what
like
that is.
You know what I mean?
It's a huge event in Mexico that had repercussions to this day. And now there's been a regime change in Mexico, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. Maybe that we'll fit that in that way. We'll talk about what's happening since more recently.
Exciting times, but scary exciting at the same time.
Yeah, there's
am I coming through? You hear me?
I do. Maybe not. Hold on a second. Are you on mic 4?
Yeah. Okay, I hear. Yeah.
And turn that up and you'll hear yourself.
All right,
you hear yourself?
All right, yeah.
Okay, so I think you're... say something. I won't talk.
I can hear myself.
You're coming up on the monitors.
All right, good.
Everything is cool. Your host there, myself, Jeff, and...
Diego.
And Diego, welcome back as co-host. And guest co-host, a lot of different titles. How's the holiday period going?
slow.
So we'll give you both.
Definitely an improvement of the exploitation I went through last year.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
About a hospital that's like hardly anyone to serve, but you're getting paid more than you know.
Yeah.
Just because they need to be open, institutional. Yeah.
I was gonna get into just what you're starting to get into. Hold on 1 second.
Is it where you work?
Well, I was just going to say, like, what is it? What is it like? We're going to give our listeners just sort of, we're going to think out loud here, and they probably have a lot of these thoughts themselves. But what is it like during the holidays for someone that both is getting, that's, you know, working, like 90% of us or whatever, 99% of us have to work a lot. And I've been putting in so-called overtime. Now, get this, at Harvard, right? They most jobs are only 35 hours, right? So overtime is really still regular time, that extra 5 hours. And I don't even notice the difference because with the commute and everything, you know. I mean, I do notice 5 hours more per week with the commute is more of a pain. But, like, you know, I should be working. They should let me work 40 hours. You know what I mean? They should let everyone work 40 hours there if they want to.
They don't start.
And they start. Instead, they make you work 35.
Isn't it nationally 40
which sounds
hours
like,
considered
no,
full-time?
They can do whatever they want but the thing is that the thing I'm trying to explain is that 35 hours might sound good. And I understand that because I hate every minute I'm working. But, and by the way, you're allowed to say that, Americans. Americans are, we're going to get into, if we have time, we're going to get into this book a little more called Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America by Alyssa Quart. Came out earlier this year. We've talked about it on the show a little bit before. And she gets into this false optimism that American workers are taught. And we're all supposed to say, how's your job going? Great, great, yeah. And you got to say that sometimes for small talk. You don't have time to sit down with everyone and complain and stuff. But, you know.
Oh, you do the look around, see if your boss is around. Hold on. Yeah, it sucks. Oh, hi, Mr. Such and Such.
How's work going? But what are the holidays like for, like, not only if you work a lot, which, I realize a lot of us do. I'm not talking down to anybody here. Maybe some students might hear this or something that don't have to work or maybe high school kids don't have to work that much, or maybe people unemployed, but they know about that. Maybe the part of the 1% is even listening, whatever. But we're all used to like getting exploited, you know, selling our labor, and we shouldn't get used to it. We should hate it. Actually, that's what I think. But yeah. You don't have to. You can hate it and still do a good job, quote unquote, if you care about that, if it's necessary to what, you know, like if you're taking care of people or something, you can still see the flaws in the system. And not like that, and not like the number of hours you have to put in. And so I was like, say if I was a teacher, right? And a lot of people have encouraged me to go into that. And I'm like, two things. I didn't like my teachers.
I'd get fired the first day.
There you go.
Because if I was teaching economics or even history, the first thing would be like, okay, kids, boom, this big book would come out, and it'll say Das Kapital on it. And, yeah, I would be basically blacklisted.
Yeah, that's the second thing I was going to mention. The first thing, though, is a little more... I don't know. I mean, I love the teachers' strike movement that's happening, and I work with teachers in the labor movement and in the socialist movement, which are often the same thing, by the way. But anyway, what I personally experienced in school was not fun with the teachers. You know, I had teachers calling me anarchists and a commie and all that stuff. When I was just forming my ideas, they were like really swinging around, you know, and they should have been more understanding. And even subjects that I thought I was good in.
That's all they called you?
They would argue with me. Huh? Oh, yeah, that's it.
I had the N-word tossed at me.
Well, they said other things, too. Like I had a Spanish teacher that we had this tradition in high school of senior skip day. Like when you're a senior, you'd pick one day, like in the spring, nice weather, and all the seniors would just leave school. And that year, the authorities, and that's the main problem here, is the hierarchy and authority things happening in school. They said, no, you can't do that. You're going to get in trouble. And a lot of us said, hey, my brothers did this. Everybody I know, my family did this for years.
It's a tradition.
Yeah, it's a tradition in this town, you know, in this school. We're going to do it. So we went out. It was mixed. You know, like only half the kids did it, that sort of thing. So I come back, and my Spanish teacher, who loved me before, all of a sudden hates me and shows it really clearly every class from that to the end of the semester, end of the senior year. Then I had, like, an English teacher one time, because I was really into English. I'd raise my hand a lot. I'd say things, you know, do all the reading, do extra reading. I was reading all the time, right? So she goes, one day she goes, I did correct her on something. I have to admit, I don't remember what it was, but I did sort of a slight correction. I was very polite. She goes, why are you always trying to undermine me? And she slams her thing, and it turns into like a 5-minute thing on me in the middle of a class. I'm like, what are you doing? This is ridiculous.
Yeah, why don't you encourage him? And it's you know,
it was horrible. It was horrible. The same teacher was racist too.
I had a guy who,
she was bad. Yeah, she was horrible.
I had there was this kid in third grade. I'll never forget. He was from Quebec. French.
Yep, yep.
French Canadian.
Yeah, yeah.
But the kid was like, I always said this guy, Dave something. I always said this guy's going to be a nuclear physicist. Watch. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? This kid would, in a math class, correct an algebra, would correct the teacher.
Yeah.
David to the office. You know, that was his. It's like.
Yeah.
Why does she have to go back to the book to make sure that the answer is correct? Dave's got the answer already in his head.
Yep, there you go. You know? Yeah, I know. This teacher was like, I also was into social studies, which you can probably imagine if you listen to the show or whatever, but into history and all that, like you are, Diego, and a lot of activists, socialists. And so even back then, when I wasn't sure what I was politically, I would get into history, and I was about what my son's age is, actually, maybe a year older. And so I had this English teacher that was really, I was bothering, apparently. And she for some reason started talking about the riots, which had just happened. I'm a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, they had just happened recently.
Oh, like Martin Luther King and...
Around the urban riots from Detroit and other places.
Yep.
And I already kind of was defending that, like, you know, like I was saying that in terms of, I don't defend rioting, but I was defending, like, the police, the conditions, the police, and all that.
There's material behind it.
Yeah, yeah, and she just went full racist on me, and, you know, did this, not, I'm, you know, Caucasian or whatever, but what I'm talking about is she's like, she would bring out just like these stereotypical horror stories of people being killed or something, and she never used the N-word, but came real close, and it was just horrible. It was just really horrible. But anyway, the whole point of that, these little anecdotes, is that I never liked school until college. I liked college a lot. I loved freaking college. But even that, I could see a lot of problems with it, right? Like the money, right? But anyway, and I just was like, do I want to be a teacher? because I didn't like it at all. I didn't like any of my teachers. I can't think of one high school teacher, public school teacher I really liked, because sooner or later, some I started to like, but then they would do something horrible.
What about being a teacher in another country like France, for instance? Would that be?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I was told back in the 90s that a lot of teachers in France are communists, that they're in the Communist Party or they're close to it.
We had a substitute that was from France, and
yeah.
We were here, man. We was like, you know, I feel you, bro.
Yeah.
He opened up a lot of things that people didn't understand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We was just like, what?
I didn't have any of that till college. Did none of that. I was really good at social studies, but it was this bizarre social studies they had in public school, at least where I went. They would just like seem to randomly pick stuff and focus on little irrational things, you know, like statistics or individuals, and there's never like a general concept going on, you know. It was very strange the way they taught it, but then of course I was starting to do other reading, so I could fill in the blanks sometimes, but not always, you know. It wasn't until college
I hated the one with the spice trades, and you know,
that kind of exactly.
Okay, you never got into how slavery run. You never not one word about slavery.
Yeah,
not one word. Oh no, the spice trades. We needed a new route to India. And when we hit here, we thought that's why we call them Indians.
You want to hear another one? And this one happens outside of public education too. This happens. I saw this in other formats, but very quickly. I remember we spent in like sixth grade, agonizing months going over what kind of the architecture of Greek and Roman civilizations, quote unquote.
The first democracy.
Yeah. But we weren't even studying democracy, quote unquote, which it wasn't, by the way, but it was a slave society, opposite of democracy, and so we were studying the Ionic, the two words are now escaping me, but the types of columns they used in their architecture. Mm-hmm. Now that's fine for an afternoon.
Yep.
You don't spend months on it. I mean, it was just ridiculous the amount of time they spent talking about anything but slavery. They never mentioned once they were slave societies, and I literally didn't know they were. Like somehow, you know, I was reading more politics, but somehow I never got into that. So I go to college and I find out real quick, boom, boom, boom. I even took Greek in college, the language, ancient language, one semester. Found out real quick it was a slave society. I was so angry. I was like, why didn't anyone ever tell me this? These are slave societies. And nobody said a word about it in public school. Can you imagine? And
I was learning more from my grandfather back in El Salvador about, you know, just our history and stuff.
Yeah.
And the history of whatever he went through during the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
And then came back. You know, I was learning more from my family than I was learning from school.
Yep. I mean, I'm in complete solidarity with teachers, and they have a horrible job. And like you said, part two of that story is, what would I do teaching the truth in public school? I would get killed. They would just fire me.
I'd be fired. I volunteer. I would love to get a job, and I'd probably last only a month or a week.
Yeah.
Why? Because some kid went and said, "Ma, I read, you know, this new teacher, he's talking about Das Kapital and this guy called Marx."
Boom. Bada boom. But, you know, I've heard of a very good...
It would have happened to Angela Davis back in the 60s. She was teaching. She went to Germany. I don't know. You remember Angela Davis?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Commie, that's it. You know, Ronald Reagan there, you know. California.
Well, my best friend who passed away, who was, you know, in Socialist Alternative, Lorraine Dardis, she had a teacher, actually somehow got away with this, in Toms River, New Jersey, junior high or high school, that taught a lot of socialist stuff. And that had a big impact on her. And she was already kind of, you know, moving in that direction. So they got along really well. And he even called her some, like, name, like, you know, making fun of her for it in a nice way. And somehow he got away with it. Every once in a while I hear about teachers like that. Like, I compare notes with other activists and comrades and friends. And
I've had a lot of tutors.
And I say,
they're not restricted as a teacher. They're just there to volunteer.
Yeah.
I've had a tutor from Chile.
His
father got, know what, Pinochet.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, straight up socialist. He was just, but I think he was more of a Stalinist type, you know.
Yeah.
Straight up, hey, we need to get rid of these people, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I just have found a few people here and there that had teachers that were able to somehow walk the line between keeping their job and telling some truth, at least. And, but anyway, so What was the original point, though? It was about teaching and why...
America's being squeezed.
I can't remember. That does fit into the...
Work.
Part of the book is about teachers that we're going to hopefully get into. Work. So
we were talking about work.
So anyway, now is a weird period.
The guy that I used to work for, the Hustle Kitchen,
yeah.
before I started yeah, looking for
the right
a new
winger.
Job.
Yeah,
that guy. Yeah. He asked me once, I'm making the meat and everything, I'm prepping. He's like, Diego, you like this job?
Ah!
And I'm like, yes, I do. You're not just saying that because you need hours, huh? Like that. I'm like,
of course not,
no,
boss.
In my head, I'm going like, yeah, no, I hate this job. And yes, I do need the hours because I need to live, you know?
Thank you very much. I've done that.
That was going on in my head.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Everybody does that, unfortunately.
What kind of question is that?
Yeah. Do you like the
job? Do you like being exploited? Might as well just ask. You don't like being a slave wager, you know?
Yes, master. Please don't hit me so hard, you know?
It was weird. The store was closed. It was 5 in the morning to do prep work.
Yep.
And it's just
oh my
me
God,
and him.
5 in the morning. Oh,
yeah, to do the prep work.
Do you like getting
catering.
Up at 4 in the morning to come and do prep work, Diego? Oh, I love it.
I don't. Well, he knew I lived around the corner, so I was like his little.
I mean, that's still too
early. I was his little perk, you know, yeah. as a guy that lives around the corner that yeah. has the keys to the place.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the original point was going to be really from me was just that the holidays are weird, both in terms of, yeah, I get a little bit of time off. And you gotta somehow structure that time. And everything in society is telling my kids right now, just lock your brain into a screen somewhere and don't structure your time. So I have to fight with them to get them to do like real things. And so that's part of it. But also it's the activism part, the socialist activism part. Things tend to slow down around the holidays. Perfectly understandable. I'm not complaining about it. But it's just odd for me, you know. So I'm sitting there on Facebook, like
everybody's
doing
complacent.
All this stuff. With nothing, no real activity. I don't consider Facebook real political activity for the most part. And I don't think everyone's being complacent. I think that, you know, you learn as a socialist, I know you know this, I'm not saying you don't know this, but mm-hmm. you learn the rhythm of the struggle varies, you know? People can't fight forever. And there has to be lulls sometimes as much as pushes forward, as much as victories, there's defeats and so on and so forth. It just kind of makes me uncomfortable, you know? And also what's weird is that not weird, but it just happens. Sometimes when you think there's going to be a period where not much is going on, say the summertime or the holidays or something, boom, something can explode. And you got to be ready for that. And you got to mobilize people during that time. And I don't know about you, but I was so looking forward to just the time off that I got here for the holidays with the family and despite the screen thing. I was just really looking forward to it, like getting to the point where like every day dragging my butt into work, working those extra hours. Just really wanted to get the time off. So I actually am glad in some ways things haven't popped wherever. But on the other hand, I'm kind of like, they need to. things need to be pushed forward here. Anyway, today's show, long introduction. Again, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Social Alternative Radio, talking music from a working class, democratic social perspective with your co-hosts, Diego and Jeff. I'm Jeff. We're here every other week. Or I'm here. Sometimes you can't make it, Diego, but sometimes I can't make it either. But anyway, we're here mostly every other week, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Listen to us live if you are. That's great. At 91.5 FM. Listen to us at WMFO.org by computer from anywhere. And we do have listeners from around the country and around the world. So we appreciate that. I have run into a couple people. Or heard from, not run into, that sounds like totally random. I have heard from and talking to a couple of people that they got interested in socialism, or I'm sorry, interested in socialist alternative and more interested in socialism in one case through listening to the show. So who knows what kind of effect we're having. Hope a good one. We got a fan letter once.
From whom?
And snail mail. Oh, I can't remember. Some local guy. That was great. Thank you.
Oh, not from Iran or?
No, that was a local guy from Medford. Because we are emanating.
Didn't we get stuff from like Ireland or something?
Yeah. Well, one time on Facebook, the thing exploded from people all over the world all of a sudden. I don't know what happened. Somebody hit some vein of social media that I don't quite understand.
They're like, what?
I don't pretend to understand Facebook algorithms.
Like, oh, the movement is happening over there.
Well, by the way, I'm glad you brought that up. Facebook, go to Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. And we have a ton of, we put up a lot. We share a lot of content.
Have a show there? Like we can actually archive and
no, that's a problem.
Man.
That's a problem.
What about Finian? Because I used to archive off of them.
Yeah, they are. They're on Facebook now. Yeah, I don't know if they're doing archiving the shows. And by the way, no complaint because we loved what you did for us. This was a website called FinianRising.org, and now it's a Facebook page. Called Feeding and Rising.
So
I'm not sure.
So they definitely have.
But they slowed down on archiving, and that's fine.
But they still have the history of like up to 2008.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Like a decade ago.
Yeah, we started around 2006. And so thank you, Feeding and Rising. And other people have downloaded the show too, but no, there's no like, I'm sorry, no archive really set up. I don't have the capabilities for that. But then here at WMFO, they only keep the shows the last 2 weeks. Which is really, I wish they would change that policy. But by the way, you can listen to the last show, one of the last shows, by going to WMFO.org and clicking on schedules and making your way to Socialist Alternative Radio. Again, we alternate weeks where every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
This show will replace the last one.
Or what happens like if you're in between shows.
Because it's every 2 weeks. So.
Right, they only keep every 2 weeks. So if you miss a show, it's not even there. But also it's not archived past 2 weeks. So you can't go back to 3 weeks or 4 weeks, as far as I know. That's still the policy.
So now we're replacing the last show you did. So now
I don't know if they keep it around.
Because that's what I do. I'll go to the library and I hear it. I hear it about 2 weeks. I just hear the whole show.
Yeah, you're right then. Yeah.
I'll go back to like listening to it.
Yeah. So as we said earlier, we're going to talk about the Mexican... I've heard this referred to in Anglo terms or whatever, the Mexico City massacre, the student massacre of 68. It's really the massacre of Tlatelolco. Sorry for the mispronunciation. Lots of consonants and not many vowels. Tlatelolco.
Oh, let me try Tlatelolco.
It's
definitely
It's not.
It's like Oaxaca, you know what I mean, or even in El Salvador, Chichilenango. You know, those are not Spanish words,
right? So we're going to base our discussion on an article by Carla Torres Beltran and Rafael Belman of the Izquierda Revolucionaria. That's left revolutionaries in revolutionary left in Mexico, which is part of the Committee for Works International. And go to socialistworld.net for more to check out more stuff about Mexico and on the website, which is the website of Committee for Works International. We want to get into that based on this sort of, we're just going to use the hook of the holidays, the anniversary, like we said earlier, 2018, 1968. I've heard radio shows and stuff like that, TV.
And a lot of interesting things were happening in 68 around the world.
Yeah, there's, and they mentioned in an article too, and we have talked a lot on the show about France 68, the largest general strike up to that time, and since maybe there's some differing. There might have been a larger general strike in India one time recently, but the character of the strike of a mass general strike in France of over a million workers was very consciously socialist for the most part, like the red flag as the flag, strike flag, singing the Internationale, the workers' anthem internationally.
Everybody had a Che Guevara. Died after a year prior, so everybody had the Che Guevara, you know.
In France, 68? In France?
Yeah.
In France,
it
really?
Blew up in that time.
Okay. And then there
somehow his picture got out, that famous, you know, stare that he had, you know, that icon. Yep. And since he died a year earlier, that was just like, that's where it spread. All those.
Yeah, I just saw a thing on Facebook that a guy, that somebody in a restaurant owner somewhere, not in Cuba, put up a Che Guevara, or put up a Cuban flag or Che Guevara flag or something, and they were making him take it down or something, making them take it down.
In Cuba?
No, not in Cuba.
Oh, okay.
But I can't remember where it was, which destroys the story, but I think it might have been the U.S. somewhere. Anyway, and then if we have time, we're going to get a little more, as I said, into the economy, what's happening with the economy, the recent stock market fluctuations. We're not going to try to analyze that too deeply, but just use that as a reference point to what we've been talking about off and on the show, is that there are things happening in the U.S. economy And there's been discussion about this, even in the corporate media, about looming recession, possible recession happening. No one knows when exactly, but that they're just bubbles, so-called economic bubbles of overinflated things. That doesn't make much sense. Overinflated areas of investment, quote-unquote, areas of production that people, as happens inevitably under capitalism, the vast majority of consumers, quote-unquote, meaning working people, can't buy back all that's being produced, and or production that was stimulated by government spending that gets cut back or whatever, like the recent tax gift to the big corporations. You know, they've had their taxes lowered from a nominal 34% down to 21%. In reality, the real tax rate, they call it the effective tax rate, was 18%. So now that's probably going to go down to who knows what, something ridiculously even lower. And that has an effect that all of a sudden there's a huge deficit. Not all of a sudden, but there is a huge deficit again in the United States Treasury. You know, the so-called the deficit we hear so much about, or we used to hear so much about, we're not hearing much about it anymore. When they want to go in debt, they do it. Like the Democrats, sometimes you'll hear these liberals say, "Ah, the Republicans, they don't care about the debt anymore." Notice how, you know, ha-ha. Isn't that ironic? Well, yeah, it is, but what it, you know, the joke is a little stale because the Democrats do that too, or they don't. Like the last person to balance the budget, I believe, was Clinton, the Clinton administration, and I think Obama might have done that or come close to it. So you see so the Democrats are going to respect the deficit and be more fiscally conservative than the Republicans. Yes, they are sometimes. That's what people don't understand. A lot of people that are into the lesser evil politics here, that the Democrats, that what you associate in your mind, and it's not an accident, you've been taught that way, but what you associate in your mind as Republican policies are often Democratic Party policies. And what you associate in your mind as Democratic Party policies can easily be Republican Party policies. You mentioned off air, Diego, the Nixon administration as an example of that latter point. Mm-hmm. The Nixon administration carried out lots of policies that would be labeled today liberal or even progressive, yeah, Democratic Party politics. The creation, the Roe versus Wade, you know, abortion rights under the Nixon administration.
EPA.
Environmental Protection Agency, creation of that, creation of OSHA, many other things that happened at that time. There was even, I remember wage and price freezes. Now, the wage freeze is bad, but the price freeze, you know, trying to limit prices on certain goods could help working people temporarily.
Even so, rents, a seal on rents, maybe.
No, but I'm saying Nixon actually did price freezes, if I remember correctly.
Oh, so nothing will go beyond a certain ridiculous. Yeah, you know, a gallon of milk's not going to be $5, you know, versus, or two.
And inflation was starting to kick up a little bit. There was a big recession in 74, 75. I think, I don't know if Nixon was still around then, but the inflation was starting to kick up based a lot on the military spending from the Vietnam War, printing a lot of money to cover that. And anyway, the point is that, you know, if you go through a list of Nixon stuff, yeah, you'll find a lot of easily identifiable conservative policies, especially in terms of rhetoric, right? But also you'll find things that are associated with a positive view of politics from a reformist liberal perspective done by this Republican administration with a conservative Supreme Court. So how did that work out? Well, that worked out because there was a mass movement in the streets, started against the Vietnam War and turned into a women's movement, a lot of other gay rights movement, civil rights, end of the civil rights movement, black power movement. All that pressured the government drastically to make reforms. And there's also a boom period in the economy, relatively speaking. So they coughed up some money when they had it, when they felt they had it. And that's why that happened. It wasn't because Nixon was a nice guy, although that's what you're told in the way history. Like, look how they whitewashed Reagan. Oh, my God.
Or Bush.
Obama writes in his book before he runs for... I wish people had read Obama's book before they elected him. Oh, Bush, yeah. Bush. Oh, that's a great point. I think we talked about that on the show, but... or maybe I did. Maybe you weren't there. But they... The huge amount of propaganda around McCain dying... And McCain was a horrible, horrible capitalist, rotten... war criminal. I mean, I'm doing everything
bombed
but swearing.
Vietnam.
Oh, bombed the heck out of it. Yeah.
And they got him too.
And then later was involved. A lot of people don't. If you read about McCain, please do. You'll read about the savings and loan scandal he was up to his neck in. and how he would just pull out the, you know, really right-wing imperialist rhetoric at the drop of a
even
hat.
Even against Russia. If it was up to him, he was president, we'd be at war already.
Yeah, he was really, really horrible. He was racist, everything really horrible. And, you know, that all got forgotten when he died. You had Ocasio-Cortez say he was a great blah, blah. I forget the details of her thing. I've been told to ignore that. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it matters tremendously. If you have someone you're calling a socialist praising a capitalist war criminal, then guess what? That's not a socialist. Figure it out. They are not a socialist. Sanders did the same thing. They're not socialists. You cannot praise imperialism and the war criminals like McCain and then Bush and call yourself a socialist. Can't do it. You're not a socialist. See you later. You're something else. You got maybe some good ideas here or there. Although Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal is actually very pro-capitalist, inviting in capitalists every step of the way, big business every step of the way, et cetera. Anyway, that's another discussion. But what I wanted to say about now I lost my train of thought. Bush, exactly. Bush, they did that times. They took the McCain thing and they doubled down on it with Bush, who did, of course, the Gulf War. Madeleine Albright was in power, I believe, under the Bush administration. I have to double check that. It might have been Clinton.
No more taxes.
She was the one. No more taxes. Yeah. Yeah.
For us.
Right. Well, no more taxes. Yeah. We've talked about this on the show many, many times. The Republicans and Democrats often are good at conflating any increase in taxes means an increase in everybody's taxes, from the 1% super rich billionaires,
to us.
Or less than 1%, much less than 1%. There's only like 8. I read there was an interesting statistic on inequality recently. It was an interesting statistic. You know, the recent surge in inequality, which is a part of capitalism consistently, but a surge in inequality that happened recently in the United States and worldwide has actually deflated the number of billionaires, because they have their own class struggle going on in a sense. Not class struggle, but they have their own competition going on in a sense. They have their own. In other words, certain billionaires are getting so powerful, like Bezos, they're sucking up. They're taking over wealth from some of the other billionaires.
Yeah, poor Gates. He's
not number one anymore. He's number three. But take that lower down the food chain. There are now billionaires that were at the top of the food chain. Now they're down a little bit, and they're not quite in the billionaire class anymore. Billionaire club, or I think there was a certain number of billions that was the cutoff, but it might have been just billion. And this is actually, so the number of billionaires has actually shrunk or something, you know, to the average. I should find that statistic again. I read it over the air.
There shouldn't be no billionaires.
But the point, of course.
You know.
Yeah.
Should be a maximum. And, you know, you can't make more than 1 million. I mean, come on, wrap your head around that. Yeah. How much do you need?
But the tax thing is that's so cleverly done by Democrats and Republicans alike, is that there's all of a sudden no such thing as progressive taxation, meaning you tax the rich more. Or exclusively, and leave the poor, meaning working people, alone, you know, or cut the taxes. There needs to be a big tax cut for us, for working class people. Socialists need to be campaigning for tax cuts for working class people. Socialists often don't do that. It's a big mistake. And that would make our lives better. We should be for anything that helps working class people have better lives. At the same time you cut taxes on working class people, you can replace that and then some by taxing in a serious way the big corporations. You know, why 34%? Why stop there? Make it 40%, make it 50%. The super rich used to be taxed at 90% on personal income back in the Eisenhower administration. Let's go back to that.
You will see the influx of money come in that can be democratically organized and
well,
voted
that's
on.
Other changes, yeah, yeah, need to happen, but yeah, that well, that would help the other changes, but and the whole idea of capital flight from the U.S. Would exist to a certain extent, but not totally, because of the U.S. is, from the standpoint of the capitalist, political stability and power in the world, they always keep a chunk of money invested here at this time in history. So anyway, next time you hear raising taxes or not raising taxes, say whose. whose taxes are you talking about not raising? Is it working class people? Because they don't ever say that. Hardly ever. They claim it, but it's not the reality. Like you said, Bush said no new taxes, and then working class people get taxed. Yeah. Is it the rich? Because that's who you usually don't tax. Right? You're cutting their taxes now. And that didn't just start with El Trumpo either. Yeah. That started before that, you know, way before that. In fact, the Kennedy administration started the rapid climb down from that 90% taxation of personal wealth in the 50s during Eisenhower. They cut that drastically. Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, before he was assassinated, cut that drastically for the rich, you know, of course. Anyway, but we'll have more discussion about the economy later, but let's talk about Mexico. Again, this the catalyst for this is simply the stupid kind of, anniversaries, 1968, 2018. You could talk about this anytime. It's a buried part of Mexican history. It, in a way, has a lot to do with migration from Mexico, in the sense that, you know, since 68 to now, although there is a new president, which we can talk about in Mexico, there has the social reforms have been cut. So, I mean, social benefits have been cut. Workers have, and unions have been attacked. And you know, there were times in Mexico history where living standards were increasing based on the 1910 Mexican Revolution and subsequent in the 30s under a left-wing government. But the time period from the repression in 68 to now, basically, has unfortunately been a time period of attacks on the Mexican masses, mainly working people.
And it got worse during NAFTA.
And the agricultural labor.
And it got worse during NAFTA.
Yeah. NAFTA was horrible.
I think that right there
destroyed
intensified
farmers.
Where we're at today.
Yeah. Destroyed
NAFTA.
Farming in Mexico to a great extent. NAFTA, of course, was the liberal Clinton administration that did that, the Democrats. And by the way, when NAFTA came back, part two under Trump, did you hear any Democrats saying they don't want a part two NAFTA?
No.
I didn't hear that.
I didn't even hear
that from the so-called socialist Democrats.
They need us to pick their, you know, their berries and
I have to go. I want to go research that. What did the so-called socialist Sanders say about NAFTA Part 2? Well, of course, there was anti-Trump rhetoric, but did they come out per se against NAFTA? Did they say just forget, get rid of NAFTA entirely? Don't replace it. I didn't hear that. Maybe they did. Got to research it. But Sanders, AOC, we're gonna look at that. Anyway, back to Mexico. Let me just start from a quick quote here from this article. Again, this is an article called Mexico, the Movement of 68 and the Massacre of Tlatelolco, which we're having trouble pronouncing, by two members of Izquierda Revolucionaria, Revolutionary Left, that's the CWI, Committee for Works International in Mexico. Quote, the youth and popular movement that developed from July to December 1968 has undoubtedly been one of the most intense and revolutionary chapters of the class struggle in Mexico. Its repercussions extended during the following decades to all areas of public life and marked the consciousness of an entire generation. To look back on that experience and the lessons it contains is an obligation for all of us who struggle for socialist transformation. Now, I would say that's an international call. It doesn't say it explicitly, but Mexico is an extremely important country, very big country, very powerful country in a way, in terms of its potential, in terms of its potential impact.
Resources
and people. And I shouldn't have to say this, but unfortunately, if you're here in the U.S. listening to our show, you know darn well we don't hear much about Mexico in the media, in the corporate media. And when we do, it's very distorted, et cetera. Like you hear a little bit lately about the repression of migrant workers coming from South and Central America through Mexico, and Mexican workers trying to get into the United States. And they'll mention something about Mexico sometimes in that. You know, of course, you hear about the wall, right? The wall that Trump wants to build and the government shutdown now happening around it. You might ask us why we're not talking about the government shutdown. Well, we could be. A lot of important social programs are being held hostage by that. But, you know, what's behind that? And this is part of what's behind it. Anyway, go ahead.
Natural, like, you know, when you're listening to a talk show radio, they're almost at top of the hour to give you that little news.
News, quote unquote.
And the lady's like, there's people in the government working but not getting paid. So, and the lady's like, well, at least I'm working. No, you're not getting paid. You're going back to slavery, idiot.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I'm sorry to say it like that. I'm not trying to, you know, I know she's working class, but it's like, she's like happy not being paid. At least I'm working. But you're not getting paid.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around for sure, unfortunately.
So Trump's over here, you know, saying, no, these checks are not going in. I'm going to, you know, basically.
Yeah, Trump's holding the government. Well, it's not just Trump. I mean, forgive me for falling into that trap. It's the Trump administration. It's a wing of the capitalist class. Using the Republicans or being part of the Republican Party to push this border wall thing down. There's a lot of interests in the border wall, right? There's the people that would profit from the building of it. There's the people that profit propagandistically from turning the attention of American working people onto a supposed immigrant-migrant crisis and away from the economic crisis that they're facing in their daily lives. So there's a lot of interests out there, including Democrats. You notice Democrats aren't opposing the wall. They're negotiating it. And Sanders, for example, voted for a previous piece of legislation. I forget when it was, what regime era it was. But it included building a wall, basically. So they've built some of that wall already, and the liberals voted for it. So they're not opposing the wall together; they're just opposing Trump's policies and the extent that he wants to build it, and the amount of money and so on. It's a real diversion. It's a real boondoggle. Is that the right word? That's an old-fashioned word for something that doesn't work.
It's a bamboozle.
Bamboozle. A fool. You're being fooled.
Malcolm X would say, it's a bamboozle.
Yeah. Boondoggled, what used to, I think, means something that is lucrative for the people doing it. People profiting from it. Sorry, not the people doing the work. People profiting from it. There's a difference there, by the way.
And shame on the construction unions that are probably going to be constructing this thing. Shame.
Yeah, I want to say that I think that I've heard of construction unions being in favor of this sort of thing, but I'm not sure. I haven't I couldn't quote that exactly, but yeah, the construction unions in this country it's a mixed bag. Sometimes they can be very progressive, and sometimes they can just be very reactionary. And one joke, a member of Social Alternative one time had, he was a carpenter. He said, he is a carpenter. He's no longer a Social Alternative. He said, there's a joke in the carpenters union that the carpenters union will build a machine because they just want anything that creates jobs, quote unquote, build a machine that will eat carpenters. It's like,
it's like the rope that's going to hang you.
Exactly. That metaphor is a brilliant metaphor because they'll be out fighting for these contractors that are rich idiots. Like when we did when Social Alternative through Shama Sawant and so on led the tax on Amazon passed.
For the housing.
That the money would go to housing. The Bezos and company turned on the heat and the Democrats all abandoned that. They voted against something they had voted on just weeks before. And they rescinded a modest little tax on Amazon. Shama Sawant and Social Alternative stuck to our guns and kept voting for that tax, but it did not pass the second time around, it was repealed. And the point of that story, though, is that who was one of the people Bezos got to fight for him? Who was one of the people the billionaire bamboozled? The Iron Workers Union in Seattle. There's a member of Socialist Alternative in the Iron Workers Union who spoke against it, and they tried to turn union members against him. You know, so you have some real reactionaries in the construction unions that believe their union is a little business.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Not a union, but a business. And so they'll fight for contractors they think are going to create jobs, or contractors they want to suck up to get jobs for their members. And you know, their argument would be, if they were sitting at this table, would be, this works, you know? And it works for a few people. But there's a lot of people that should be unionized construction workers that aren't, because you haven't organized them, or your model of union organizing is outdated, starting back in the 1900s, because it's still based on this model of a scarcity of skilled labor that you will then say, go up to a contractor and put pressure on them on the one hand, but on the other hand, say, we're the best workers for you. But what's happened for the last century, basically, is that the contractors started their own training programs, duh. And they trained people, too. They're probably not as good, well-trained as the union people. I'll give you that. I mean, the unions do train people really, really well. And it's always better to be union than non-union. So I'm not trashing I want people to be in the construction unions, mm-hmm. but I want the construction unions to be wide open. and not just bringing in a trickle of apprentices when the economy, quote unquote, is good, quote unquote, and then cutting back when it isn't. And also, as the original point, fighting for stupid construction for rich people, whether it's luxury housing or big offices,
yeah, you notice
when you should
how
be fighting for public housing.
You notice how those go up faster? Look in Central Square by the McDonald's.
Oh, that's where I work, man. That's where I work.
That thing wasn't there a couple months ago. Yeah. I go there. I didn't go there for at least a good month and a half.
Yeah.
For some reason, I never had to go to Central Square. And all of a sudden, I'm being driven through Central Square to taxi to get home one night.
Yeah.
And I see this huge, like, oh, my God, what is that? And, of course, the school that's right next to where I live takes 2 years to build.
Yeah, I went by there
the other
day.
But this thing was up in a couple of months.
I went by the, we're talking about Cambridge, Massachusetts right now. Yeah.
So this is, okay, well, that's public. We don't, you know, that can take its time. You know, we have a time frame of 2 years.
Yeah.
This thing went up within I seen them make the hole, all of a sudden, boom, it's there.
But where the story also gets interesting or whatever. I mean, that's interesting, but I mean, your point about public private is interesting because you have to get city approval and other things for that building that you saw shoot up for that to go up that fast. So it's not exactly a clear split. The city, which is supposed to be for the people, is for the capitalists. Even though they're all Democrats, they think they're left wing. They're Democrats. So they've allowed these corporations to come in through zoning laws, like that used to be a city parking lot. I used to park there. Can't anymore. There's nowhere to park now where I work. So the city's helping the private enterprises, private greed machines, to prosper now in this part of the city we're talking about. And by the way, that's not the only place. Right next to where I work, and I told this story on air, a big building went up.
Right next to H Mart.
Building, part of H Mart, even. If you're the entrance, that's the new entrance to H Mart. There's going to be like a new entrance on that side street, or one new entrance.
They're keeping H Mart there.
Oh, yeah. H Mart's going to stay there, definitely. H Mart might even own it for all we know. I don't know. But anyway, this apartment building goes up. And H Mart, by the way, is a grocery store chain that I find incredibly expensive. I don't know why anyone goes there.
It's Asian. It's what everything like. If you're into Asian cooking, that's where you go. That's the place.
But
to
still
go.
Really expensive.
I know.
But anyway, so I don't think all Asians go there because it's so freaking expensive. But anyway, so they're building this apartment building right up against it. Took away another parking lot, by the way. There you go, Cambridge. You're going to make a lot of money off traffic, parking tickets. Hope you're happy. The thing I wanted to say about it was it built mostly non-union or maybe entirely non-union because I ran into a Carpenter's local picket, Carpenter's Local 40, I think it was, picketing there in its early stages. And I talked to the workers and I just happened to be walking by there one time. Remember this story where a guy fell? Did I tell you this?
No.
Oh, okay, all right.
This is
so,
you to me.
So I go back and forth past this construction site every day. I've been talking to the workers. I know that the carpenters, the workers out there picketing. It's one of these pickets that they do, if you're in the U.S., you've probably seen these. They're kind of just name and shame pickets. And they're even, if you, God forbid, you take one of their leaflets because they're usually written in such legalistic jargon you can't understand it. But basically what they're saying is, this is a non-union workplace. We want it to be union. Doesn't say that clearly, whatever, if they're handing anything out. These guys weren't even handing anything out. They were just sitting there. See? And back when picket lines meant something, that could have had an effect. In the 50s or 60s, that could have stopped people from delivering, could have stopped anything. Now all deliveries are going in and out. They're not trying to stop anything, really. And one day I just happened to be seeing, walking by, and I heard a big, they were a lot of buildings now are prefabricated, meaning parts, huge, like an entire wall might be.
Yeah,
maybe that's exaggerated, but entire, let's say, part of a wall could be prefabricated. So they're delivering these like.
It's like what parts. They did in the Soviet Union with these massive. If you go to Moscow, all these apartments came up. You know.
Yeah. What I'm trying to explain is like they delivered, like already done, like corners or something to with windows in them and walls already done, or that maybe got to put the stuff inside or whatever. But it was kind of fascinating on the one hand, but on the other hand, it meant huge. Piles to do it, quote unquote, efficiently. They put huge piles on cranes, lift the stuff up 3-4 stories. It's really, really heavy. And so one of these piles fell, took a worker with it. I didn't see the worker fall, but I heard the crash of the stuff. And I ran over and I see a worker stumbling out from behind. I couldn't swear. I couldn't see. He must have been part of that mess, all bleeding and stuff. And he collapses. And they're already calling.
What was this?
Yeah, Central Square. They're already calling 911 and stuff. So I
did he pass away?
I don't know. We don't know. He was alive when I saw him. He was sitting up, but bleeding from like two or three places. And so I go back to work. I'm looking at it from work. The ambulance shows up, take him away. And I called the Carpenters Union immediately and told them about it. And they go, they weren't surprised because it's non-union. They're cutting back on safety and all that. And the guy supposedly went and investigated it, the Carpenters Union official I spoke to. But, you know, the next day, nothing had changed. There was no leaflet or anything saying, hey, this is a dangerous workplace. There was no beefing up of the picket. It was picket was like, I'm saying, like three people, you know. So the building trades are like, and they have these symbolic pickets, usually unemployed guys out there. I say guys because usually guys, but it could be women. They're doing a sort of very, very hard to understand, low-key name and shame game on the non-union contractors. It has no effect whatsoever that I can see. Another strategy that just doesn't work, doesn't do anything, waste of time. It pays the guys that are unemployed, which I guess is all right because I think they pay them from the from some sort of fund or something, but I hope they do at least. So anyway, back to Central Square, though. So they're building this all this stuff non-union. The city is giving them the permits for it.
And the way they're
it.
Probably building it is that if we ever have an earthquake,
everyone that I know that's looked at that building says it's crap, including a grad student in architecture that works in my area. He's from Harvard.
No, I looked at it. I was like,
he said it's crap. Yeah.
This is how they used to build stuff in Mexico City before 85, and that's why all these buildings during that earthquake just like pancakes, boom, one after another.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This and
ever since
yeah.
that 85, you know, talk yeah. about Mexico, yeah. you know, yeah. ever since 85, they got stricter on their building yeah. codes because yeah. of that.
This grad student in Mexico, I'm sorry, this grad student at work, sorry, not in Mexico, he was saying that there's a lot of what you were just describing, in a way, planned obsolescence, meaning they're building things thinking they're going to fail within the next 5 to 6 years, like Windows, for example, rather than trying to build them to last as long as possible. And that's, of course, typical in capitalism in the United States, but
just like buildings,
they used to be building codes and stuff that
yeah,
kind
it's
of
like
tried
buildings,
to stop. You know?
Buildings have been there since 1800s, so it's still
yeah.
sturdy.
Yeah.
You
not
don't
anymore.
Make them that same
not
way.
Anymore.
Real
so,
wood, real yeah. iron, you know.
So getting back to this, the massacre in 68 in Mexico City, this article from socialistworld.net called A Mexico Movement of 68 and the Massacre of Tlatelolco from October 3rd, 2018. They go into, which I liked, I learned some stuff here, and you know about this, Diego, I think, some of this. Nature of the Mexican capitalist state. They talked about that we mentioned earlier, the period of social reforms under Lázaro Cárdenas in the 30s, carrying out many of the demands of the revolutionary process initiated in 1910. Now, I'm listening to a supposedly like progressive show on another radio station, WBZ, the Boston College station. Not WBZ, sorry. WCBC, I think it's called, Boston College Radio Station. Has a big signal. I can hear it much further than this signal, unfortunately. And there's a guy on there. I'm not trying to trash his show, but I mean, I'm not too into it. It's sort of alternative news, and it's usually not very, I don't know. It's usually the typical liberal, never say the yes word type stuff. You know, I don't hear him saying the C word, capitalism, much anymore. Socialism. Anyway, I don't know. I don't want to trash the show. I'm sure it's better than a lot of stuff on the air. But today the guy was making this point that he didn't quite, he was mentioning, referencing, but not quite making this point that the 1910 revolution in Mexico, maybe he made it at some point, I wasn't listening after a certain point, the revolution in Mexico in 1910 created a lot of repression in the United States against people living, U.S. citizens that were Latino or immigrants at the time. Huge wave of repression and murders and stuff by the Texas mm-hmm. Rangers and all that in Texas. And they didn't put it in the process. He didn't put it in the context of 1910, which is a huge revolutionary movement.
If I was them too, I would intertwine that with the whole thing of World War II. Why did we get involved?
No, World War I. This is World War I, 1910.
Yeah, I'm sorry. World War I.
Yeah.
Where the Kaiser was threatening to support the Mexico. That's why we went in.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll have to read about that.
What was his name? Wilson?
Woodrow Wilson. Democrat, by the way.
Yep.
Horrible racist.
That was his reason to go into World War One, yeah. Was because the fear of Germany, because there was a lot of Germans to influence in Mexico. Germany helping Mexico,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
To take back, yeah. The what used to be Mexico, California, basically all those states.
Well, also Texas. I think there were other reasons too. They got into World War One, but I just mentioned real quickly that Wilson was
his
first bloodlust. One thing about Wilson though, people should understand, is
going viciously after Pancho Villa,
viciously anti-union, viciously anti-socialist. I've got an article here. I don't know if I'll time you into where Eugene Debs got thrown into prison by Wilson. Viciously pro-capitalist and a Democrat, you know, one of those great Democrats we're told about, and got us into this war over European colonies, otherwise known as World War One. Anyway, so this article back in Mexico at this time, between 1910 and into the 30s, a period of enormous popular pressure and the rise of worker struggles, the nationalization of the railroads and the oil industry by Cardenas in the 30s was an open challenge to the imperialist capital that monopolized Mexico's main sources of wealth. These measures and the strong impetus given to agrarian reform through distribution of land among the agricultural workers, campesinos, created a mass base for the regime. Then the article goes on to talk about union federations that were formed in the late 30s. Also talked about that, unfortunately, the Popular Front program of the Stalinist Communist Party kind of wrecked a lot of that potential for revolution and even for better reforms. And you had this situation where it started to work backwards, started to go backwards. So so the Mexican bourgeoisie at this time, vast sectors of it rejected the populist approach of the left and Cardenas' reforms, and the struggle was polarized sharply. In terms of class and so on. So when Cardenas decided to found the Partido de la Revolución Mexicana, PRM, he confronted large sections of the army and the oligarchy, which acted as a transmission belt of British and American imperialism. So after hard battles for control of the PRM in 1946, the ruling class changed the name of Cardenas' organization to the Institutional Revolutionary Party, PRI, which some of our listeners may have heard of, because that still exists, although now it's for the first time in decades, it's lost its popularity. I mean, just, it's amazing this guy, AMLO, right? What's his full name? Do you remember?
I just know him by
AMLO, the left populist that just got elected in Mexico through a left populist party.
Which is a movement also that started in Guatemala, just to let people know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yep. That kind of is linked into the whole, kind of like, let's say all of a sudden we had a third party here in the United States,
yeah.
You know, on the left from the right in the so-called left here, Democrats,
left of the Democrats,
liberal.
Right, a third party, yep.
Yeah, basically.
That's kind of the point I was going to make, that there have been
it's
left.
It's where we should be doing, been, you know, all yeah, of a sudden, you know, yeah. Hey, enough, you guys, take it, you know, time out. It's time for us to take, you know.
Yeah.
Put the independent.
Well, there have been left parties in Mexico, like the the PDR or something, or PRD, recently, but that got discredited for a variety of reasons, and there were left figures that were very popular. So Mexico's always had this kind of, like most countries, except for the United States, more than a two party, more than a duopoly of bourgeois parties. They've had workers' parties, left wing parties, but they messed up in one way or another. Now we have this new attempt through AMLO with the Populist Left Party, which will mess up because he's not running against, I don't see anything he's doing to organize the masses against capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's got to happen to survive if you call yourself any kind of left wing or socialist.
He should learn from what happened to Chavez.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, he won't. By the way, I got to give the legal ID of the station. It is, we are WMFO, 91.5, I'm sorry, we're WMFO Medford or WMFO in Medford. Otherwise known as Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. We're a little slice of that community-based socialist alternative radio. We're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We're also, you can hear us over the airwaves at 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, some sort of border of Medford and Somerville. Tufts Freeform, also known as Tufts Educational Radio. Got a lot of names here for ourselves. And basically, we're WMFO in Medford. And we also are found on the internet at WMFO.org. So that's the stuff we got to do at the top of every hour. Now, getting back to Mexico, the point that, what was the point that was going to
be? Oh, you were talking about how this